Ergo, the dark forces have a lot of momentum built up, and they are deeply entrenched in the important nations. This makes the task considerably more difficult. As can be seen, the Omegan presence is long-term, and it is deeply entrenched in Earth's culture. Project Terra's core function is infiltration into every level of human activity that has been in any way compromised or directed by Omegan activity. The primary areas of interest are of course military and scientific, since the Omegans are using them to build a formidable force for future assaults on all but defenseless Confederation worlds. The Alliance has achieved a substantial level of penetration, but because the Omegans are acutely aware of our activity, their opposition is unrelenting and savage. They kill their opponents when they are found, usually in brutal ways. We are at a disadvantage in that our implant network is still far from comprehensive on Earth, and our operatives are quite often out of its range. At those times, they are, as you say, on their own. By unknown means, they have a rough map of the areas where the implant net is effective. The Omegans take advantage of that limitation by waiting until their targeted agents are beyond the coverage of the network, and thus cannot be rescued by emergency PDP teleportation. We have lost many good and brave men and women to the Omegans because of the leak of information about the net's effectiveness. Fortunately, although the implant net transponders are often in unsecured areas, they are undetectable by electronic means, and they have thus far remained free of damage or destruction. One major thrust of PT activity is expanding the network to include all areas where our operatives are active. At this writing, we have completed about 47% of the desired system. One drawback is that although they are unaffected by most materials, and can work in urban areas with little more problem than in a rural setting, they are limited in their effective range to a radius of just under 3 miles. You might compare them to your cellular phone network. Because of the range limit, a grid of transponders is required to extend coverage to encompass the entirety of an urban operation center. They are self-powered and can operate for over 10 years before requiring replacement. This allows us to site them in places that are seldom or never visited by humans, such as embedding them in the outer walls of buildings. If uncovered by unauthorized personnel, they self-destruct, ergo they remain a mystery. We have lost a few over the years to innocent human activities such as demolition, but typically that causes public knowledge, and is compensated for in advance by sighting a new unit in the immediate area. In response to an anticipated question, there was one in the outer wall of the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City. The loss caused an uncovered area in Manhattan for several months, until activity had subsided sufficiently to permit sighting two new units to fill the gap. There is no evidence that the Omegans were in any way involved in the events of that tragic day. In fact, they lost several high-level personnel and a vast store of data in the collapse of the South Tower. Returning to our topic, the Alliance has managed to become a major obstacle to efficient Omegan operations. We have impeded or stopped Omegan activities involving new non-chemical propulsion systems for space-traveling vehicles. Our information sources revealed that preliminary work had begun on what, on your world, would be called an exotic technology, that is, anti-gravity. Through our operatives, we managed to plant some disinformation in high-level military circles. It was effective in instilling doubt in the minds of the officers who would have the final say in approving funding for the research. When the day arrived for the demonstration of the prototype, a few subtle but disastrous changes were made by a deep cover operative in the computer programs that controlled the system. As a result, the test went totally wrong and the unit ultimately destroyed itself. It wasted $150 million in research funding. The project was mocked and quickly cancelled. To this day, none of the involved people have the slightest idea what happened, although they were well aware that the Alliance was behind the failure. It was one small victory, but it gives some insight into the sort of activity that the Alliance is using against the Omegans. While we accept that we are not going to drive them off the planet, we can be unrelenting thorns in their side. Oftentimes, hitting the enemy with delays, setbacks and unexpected expenses is as effective as outright victory, especially when they upset a timetable that has very little wiggle room. The Omegans are very methodical and inflexible, and they are unaccustomed to what amounts to guerrilla warfare. If we were to make a historical comparison with America's Revolutionary War, the Omegans would be the Redcoats, marching and fighting according to their long-established procedures. The Alliance would be the Revolutionaries, waging war by devious, unpredictable tactics that the British had never encountered. In war, the side that cannot adapt to unforeseen circumstances always loses. One thing that is in our favor is that the Omegan leadership has been forced to divert time, manpower and financing to Earth that they had not anticipated, and it is negatively impacting their operations elsewhere. While we won't offer any specific examples, since the involved systems are unknown to you, we will say that an encounter between the Omegans and the Alliance that should have been at worst a stalemate became an Alliance victory because of reduced forces due to the situation here. Wearing down the enemy's resolve and hitting them on many fronts is an old standard in the art of warfare. Section 4. Present-day information. While specifics of our activities on Earth are for the most part highly classified, the following will bring the reader up to date on the basics of the ongoing Project Terra program. Alliance field operatives? As would be expected, our operatives are concentrated in the nations that are major players in world affairs. As of June 12, 2008, the number of operatives in those countries are as follows: 1,000 plus only, worldwide field operatives. United States 7,623. China, PRC, 6,812. Russia 6,108. Israel and the East 5,733. United Kingdom 3,280. France 2,050. Australia 1,822. Germany 1,516. India 1,384. China, Taiwan 1,182. Japan 1,075. 38 other countries have operatives at work, but the counts range from 812 to 177. Those countries are being monitored, but they play little or no active role in matters that Project Terra is addressing. The ones listed above are all involved in Omegan-related activities. In time, there were as many as 22,800 Alliance operatives in the U.S. alone. However, your technological progress over the last 20 years, with a little help, especially in communications and computers, has provided us with the ability to combat the Omegan forces far more efficiently with far fewer field ops. The primary reason is that the Omegans have embraced it to make their activities less taxing on their comparatively limited resources. In doing so, they provided us with a way to wiretap their operations. By using data and communication systems that are compatible with those of Earth, they have exposed a weak spot in their armor. To be sure, their encryption methods are superlative, but the 140 Alliance cryptologists assigned to Earth are up to the challenge. One section of the CalComp computer facility has been devoted to the sole function of dealing with Omegan encryption methods. They are aware that given time, we can crack any encryption that they can create. And they in turn are playing the game by constantly altering their codes. It has become a contest. One method that they employ is sending portions of communications over numerous routes. We can monitor all those routes and accumulate the parts, but the challenge is assembling them in the correct sequence and then decrypting the whole. To say that it is time-consuming is to grossly understate it. Even with our computers, it involves many hours. There is a considerable respect in our cryptology group for their Omegan peers, and it is most likely shared on the Omegan side. They are scientists. In a different reality, they would spend long hours in lively discussions and camaraderie. Omegan field operatives? Since the topic of this portion is operatives, it is reasonable to provide an overview of the Omegan counterpart. In terms of headcount, they vastly outnumber us. We of course have no reliable figures, but our analysts estimate no less than 500,000 of them worldwide, with at least a third of them in the United States. Unlike the Alliance team, which is primarily devoted to covert action within your society, the majority of Omegan field ops are what you would call enforcers, with some estimates placing their numbers as high as 70%. They were engaged in deep cover activity within your governments, militaries and scientific fields, but the Omegans opted to deal with their opponents swiftly, violently and without mercy. This is alien to Alliance practices, and we are at a distinct disadvantage. The Omegans' routine murdering of anyone whom they capture keeps our ops in a constant state of alertness and caution. After a time, that can take a heavy psychological toll on them. For that reason, field ops are assigned on a rotating basis, with an average of 2 months in the front lines and 1 month in non-confrontational activities. There are some with higher levels of resistance and stamina, but we ask no more of them. We find that there is a considerably higher percentage of enforcers in military fields than in government or science. One supposes that it is reasonable to expect it, given the nature of the occupation. That knowledge does not make our task easier, and Alliance ops have been killed in university and corporate settings. The Syndicate. At this point, we must introduce another group into the equation. The following information was provided to Bob in 1988 and updated on January 1, 2007. We have asked him to quote it here. There is a conflict of literally interstellar proportions being waged at this very moment. This confrontation is on 23 planets. There were 17 when the info was presented in 1988, 6 have been added since then, within the squadron of our galaxy. One of them is Earth. The Dark Forces are known as Omegans, a somewhat inaccurate but adequate translation of the Galanquin name used by this force. They use the English term themselves, and it is therefore the official Alliance designation for them. The Omegans are under the watchful eye and limited aegis of an organization of worlds of vast power and resources, known to the Alliance as the Syndicate. The Alliance adopted the term from English to represent this body, otherwise unidentified, which operates in an organizational manner suggestive of our world's criminal superstructure. The Syndicate is not per se criminal, but rather is coldly, relentlessly opportunistic. Their driving force is the acquisition of wealth and control. However, they have no moral code to prevent them from using means that we would define as criminal. They offer support to other groups if they see in it an opportunity for gain, whether short or long term. Their backing of the Omegans is seen as a means to gain footholds within the Confederation sectors. The Confederation's strict, inflexible adherence to non-interference directives leaves them ripe for plucking. The Syndicate does not provide direct military support, but they underwrite military forces as required in the pursuit of their goals. The Omegans are rarely found in Alliance sectors, inasmuch as the UWA is not bound by a strict interpretation of the Non-Interference Directive, and their incursions would be forcefully repulsed. The ongoing conflict is not, in our terms, a hot war on these 23 unaligned worlds. Rather, it is a protracted test being conducted by the Syndicate to determine if the Omegan forces can wrest control from the Alliance, which, while not officially representing any of these planets, has infiltrated them en masse to repulse the incursions of the Omegan influence. If the Omegans succeed, full Syndicate support is assured, and the results are fearsome to contemplate. This activity is, per the rigid guidelines established by the Syndicate, to be covert on the 23 planets, although open hostility outside these arenas is sanctioned, and has resulted in a number of firefights on a scale that beggars our myopic, parochial understanding of warfare. Should the confrontations on any of these planets become actual war, the Syndicate will withdraw its support, and the Omegans know this would result in immediate extermination at the hands of Alliance military might. It is problematical whether the Alliance could defeat the Syndicate in full warfare, but the best estimates of Alliance tacticians, and the scant information filtering out of the Syndicate from a small group of agents, suggest that they have no more desire than the Alliance to test their worth in combat. In itself, this is considered a plus for the Alliance, because reservation on the part of the Dark Forces is usually interpreted as awareness of internal inadequacies that render a sure victory unlikely. In a letter to Gabriel Green dated October 23, 1983, this info was provided by us, for your consideration. This analysis, the Omegans are an arm of the Syndicate, and they receive their backing, but, Like Cuba's to the Russians, the Almegans are to the Syndicate. Earth is located almost centrally in the combined region controlled by the Federation and the Alliance, ergo spatially isolated from the Syndicate-controlled areas. The Alliance feels that an out-and-out attack on Almegans here might provoke the Syndicate enough to spur them into rash responses that could well develop into the interstellar war one mentioned earlier. The approach must therefore be to deal with the Almegans in such a way as to convince the Syndicate that they aren't worth wasting all that energy and material to bolster them. The Alliance is capable of creating the necessary impediments to Almegan operations elsewhere in the galaxy, but what must be done on Earth amounts to guerrilla warfare. They must be undermined and their influence abated and ultimately destroyed without precipitating a retaliation that would blast Earth back into the Stone Age. It is the Alliance's suspicion that the Syndicate will not risk a massive confrontation in which their losses will be as devastating as ours, and that they would probably not win in the end. If the source of the conflict is a far-flung group that cannot demonstrate that it merits such support, the Alliance has had informal contact with the Syndicate since that was written, and they have indirectly confirmed our analysis of almost 25 years ago. They are not interested in a military encounter with the Alliance, which has grown far more powerful since then. The elision in the quoted text above is due to a reference that later proved to be grossly in error. We asked Bob to delete it. Prognosis. Despite the setbacks and handicaps, the Alliance is confident of eventual victory. We have on our side the fact that the Almegan program on Earth is over 2 centuries old, and they have invested vast resources here. Thus they are zealously avoiding any action that would expose them to your people or merit direct Alliance action against them. That would of course wipe out their centuries of work and result in massive, possibly unrecoverable damage to their operations on other worlds. An Alliance response here would be extended to them as well. The result would be a bloody war that would ultimately result in their destruction as a military force, if not as a whole. One other factor dominates their thinking. If the Syndicate abandons them, they are lost. They are many things, but the Almegans are not fools. This is not by any means a soon-to-be-resolved situation. Both sides are in it for the long haul. It will take years and perhaps decades to achieve the release of Earth from the Almegan death grip. However, the stakes are so high that it must be brought to a definitive conclusion. Compromises and truces are not options. This is a winner-takes-all situation, and the Alliance does not accept defeat. The Almegan influence on your world will be felt for years to come. They will, if anything, grow bolder and more dangerous as you develop new technologies that will aid their program to create a mighty fighting force for the conquest of peaceful worlds. Expect to see militarism increase as you are steered in the direction that your Almegan masters want you to travel. As we pointed out, their program relies on maintaining worldwide tension and unrest while you are pressed into their evil mold. A world at peace is a poor candidate for becoming an interstellar army. Closing. That concludes this report. No further communications of this type will occur unless the situation changes sufficiently to merit updates. Suffice it to say that the people of Earth are incapable of direct opposition to the Almegans. Any attempt to confront them will be a fatal error. They need you, but they don't like or respect you. If you annoy them, they will kill you. Let us fight the battle. Be content with knowing what is going on. Valus and Onalsi Anor. Elder Master Kalen Lee Reeton. Project Terra Controller. Section 5. Terran Base Reactivations, 2009-07-18. The information below was provided by Elder Master Kalen Lee Reeton on July 18, 2009, via encrypted email from Plato.com. He directed that it be posted as an addition to the Project Terra status report. The following underground facilities were approved for reactivation, and were recommissioned in 2008. This decision was in response to increased tension in the regions that they cover, which our analyses determined to be the result of intensified Almegan operations. The sole function of the facilities is to provide communications, logistical support and materiel services for the field operatives assigned to those regions. Eurocom is under the authority of MASCOM. AsiaCom and MECOM are under the authority of CALCOM. The field operatives count is based on these numbers from the previous page, plus added personnel is approved by the Project Terra team, listed as other, AsiaCom, China, PRC, 6812, India, 1384, China, Taiwan, 1182, Japan, 1075, other, 1120, Eurocom, United Kingdom, 3280, France, 2050, Germany, 1516, other, 970, MECOM, Israel and Mideast, 5733, other, 1830, AsiaCom, Terran Region Asia, Base ID Code AsiaCom, Recommission Date, March 22, 2008, Location, China East of Beijing Base Personnel, 3,200, Field Operatives, 11,573, Controller, Master Elak Morris, Eurocom, Terran Region, Europe, Base ID Code, Eurocom, Recommission Date, July 15, 2008, Location, Switzerland Southeast of Bern, Base Personnel, 2,100, Field Operatives, 7,816, Controller, Master Ridan Trelli, MECOM, Terran Region, Middle East, Base ID Code, MECOM, Recommission Date, October 24, 2008, Location, Egypt South of Cairo, Base Personnel 1,900, Field Operatives, 7,563, Controller, Master Avar Marek, approved for release on July 18, 2009, Elder Master Kalin Lee Reeton, Project Terra Controller, RK, Questions and Answers, 2009, 01, 02. The following communication was conducted via computer on January 2, 2009, an excellent way to begin the new year. RK field in the questions. Q, good morning. Gentle brother. Thank you for consenting to engage in the first communication of the new year. To begin, in reading over your communication titled A Mission to Earth, I read this comment. It was determined that it was not wise to allow our probes to detect the presence of life other than on Earth, which they determined by our trajectory was our destination. The probes were jammed, as you say. Could you expand on the phrase, to detect the presence of life other than on Earth? A. Kalo to you, my brother. The non-Terran life in question was based in the Confederation facility under the surface of Mars that has been mentioned in other communications over the years. At that time it was new, and was operating on a limited basis as construction continued. It was begun in your year of 967 AD, and was completed in 971 AD. During that time, the Sears base mentioned in the communication was the primary Confederation facility. Once the Mars facility was fully operational, the Sears base was closed and dismantled. The Confederation also had and still has a base located on Pluto, primarily for scientific research and limited military activity. It has a personnel contingent of about 300 individuals. We know nothing of its details. The Confederation has offered no information and we have not asked them about it. It poses no threat or impediment to Alliance operations. Q. One thing undiscussed in the same communication is whether Krunter had any information at all about Earth other than its being an apparent source of radio signals. Did your pioneers go on their 508-year voyage not knowing what they would find when they arrived? A. I had contemplated including some relevant information on the subject, but decided that it would serve as an interruption in the narrative. This is a good time to address the matter. Although we had not ventured into interstellar space, our space program was well advanced. As part of our scientific activities, we launched a string of 20 Palomar-sized telescopes into a roughly 120,000-mile diameter orbit above our world. Anyone familiar with telescopes knows that the limit of angular resolution of an optical instrument is primarily determined by the diameter of the light-collecting optics, or its aperture. The larger the lens or mirror, the higher the potential resolution. Obviously, The premise of a mirror 120,000 miles in diameter is ludicrous. However, that isn't needed. The same effective diameter can be achieved by an array of far smaller instruments working in unison, transmitting their images to a central computer that coordinates the signals and creates a composite that is equivalent to a single image from a telescope of that diameter. The principle is known to your scientists as interferometry. Note, see these Wikipedia pages for information, angular resolution, radio telescope, astronomical interferometer, aperture synthesis. Because of the angular resolution that is possible with an instrument of such a large baseline, and because your solar system is not seen on edge from Grinder, we studied it quite extensively. We easily determine the size and mass of your sun and therefore the masses of your planets by their orbital radii and periods. Earth is nearly centered in the habitable zone of the sun, and spectrographic analysis determined that Earth contained all the necessary elements for life. We realized that the transition from Grinder to Earth could not be done immediately, but since we had over half a millennium, we slowly altered the ship's bioenvironment to accustom our people to at least some of Earth's expected characteristics. We did not have an accurate analysis of your atmosphere, and we thus retained our own for the duration of the journey, assuming that it could be addressed once we arrived. The referenced communication explains the other details. Q. Since you assumed that advanced life existed on Earth based on the reception of radio signals from our system, was it perhaps incautious to assume that you would be welcomed here? A. In retrospect, yes, it probably was. However, hope stirs endlessly in the human heart, and coupled with the fact that we had never encountered beings from beyond the Krina system, we had no standard on which to base a decision. We therefore made an assumption that was incautious. But your people have a saying, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. History has shown that our choice was good, but as another Terran Bonlo observes, hindsight is always 20/20. Q. How long after the launch of the Explorer ship was it before you achieved interstellar travel? A. I am anticipating your next question. We began it in earnest about 50 of your years after the launch of the Earth mission. However, we were restricted to sublight speeds and thus confined our exploration to nearby worlds. This spanned about 300 Earth years. Once we developed subspace, it was nearly 70 Earth years before it became practical enough to use it with any level of confidence. And even then we did not engage in long journeys. Until we had set up the prerequisite network of marker beacons, we were flying blind. Therefore we spent another 100 of your years establishing the network over a radius of about 500 light years by your measure. Would you like to ask the expected question? Q. I was going to ask if you had sent crafts in our direction to catch up to your explorer ship, but I can see that it would have landed before that could have happened. A. Then I was correct in my assumption. I can say that we did send a scouting mission to Earth in your year 1095. But we found no trace of the ship or its crew, primarily because we looked in the wrong places, and the disassembling of their ship had eliminated their long-range communication systems. We had no certain knowledge that they ever arrived here. And the primitiveness of your world in those times disheartened us. We had no incentive to conduct an exhaustive search. We sent probes sporadically over the centuries, but made Earth a low-priority destination, until your technological level had increased to a point where your world became of interest once more. We established an ongoing presence on Earth in 1955. Our first contact with you 6 years later is explained in the original series of contacts. We have not mentioned it before, but our discovery of the Tibet landing site occurred in 1973, after we had pored through hundreds of ancient volumes for any small clue that would help us to locate the hallowed ground. We found veiled references to gods who came to Earth in fire and thunder and lived in Tibet on a sacred mountain. With that information, we performed an exhaustive search of the Tibetan mountains, the one area on Earth that we never considered as a likely place for landing, with a variety of sensitive scanners. After a month of looking, the site was at last revealed. Our excitement and joy were tempered by the discoveries that I described in my communication that you cited at the beginning of this session. However, we were resolved that it would live forever in our history. We photographed and recorded every square inch of the base, removed the remains of those brave souls, their volumes of records, their personal effects and everything else of value. We then sealed the caverns forever. And with that we brought the mystery of their brave quest to a reverend end. They now occupy a hallowed place in Krinder's Museum of History in Rail City. Q, do you have any opinions on the results of our election? A. We don't involve ourselves in Terran politics, since we value our sanity too highly. But on a global scale, man seems to have an obsession with increasing the size and power of government at all levels. The nations that actively seek to limit the size and power of their governments are few indeed. The overwhelming majority of Earth's people seem willing to surrender their freedom and rights in return for an illusion of safety and security. This is in direct opposition to the nature of the human spirit. When the fire of liberty is quenched in the human heart, and self-sufficiency gives way to dependency, there is little hope for the future short of rebellion by the few who will not submit to tyranny. Your nation is unfortunately an example of what one of your historians, Jim Nelson Black, wrote in his book entitled, When Nations Die, 10 Warning Signs of a Culture in Crisis, 1, increasing lawlessness, 2, loss of economic discipline, 3, oppressive bureaucracy, 4, decline of educational excellence, 5, weakening of cultural foundations, 6, loss of respect for tradition, 7, gross materialism, 8, gross immorality, 9, decay of religious belief, and 10. Devaluing of human life. And there is another list often attributed to Alexander Tegeler. Though its authorship is unknown, the list stands on its own. The average age of the world's greatest civilizations had been 200 years. These nations have progressed through the following sequence: from bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to selfishness, from selfishness to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependency, from dependency back into bondage. Can you see the above lists being fulfilled in your nation? The second one is especially relevant, since it describes what happens when people are willing to allow themselves to be shackled as long as the chains are applied slowly and with only a little inconvenience and discomfort. Your nation was born in a revolution against a tyranny from across the sea, and now you seem willing to submit to a tyranny imposed from within, as long as your people can be deceived that it's for their benefit. I say to you that you had best hope that the lovers of liberty are abundant enough that your nation is not beyond recovery. I must now end this communication, my brother. We shall have many more such opportunities. Valus. And Valus to you, brother RK. RK Questions and Answers. 2009, 03, 05.